Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Firefighters Podcast, where we seek to develop, inspire, and motivate the world of the emergency services operator through a series of wide-ranging conversations. Now, before we go any further, just hit that rate, follow, or subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to. It's a key performance indicator for us and helps us reach even more people. Now, here's what we've got for you today. Many of the more infamous fires in the history of New York City Fire Department are given a name. The list is long. Father's Day, 9/11, Third Avenue Collapse, Worcester Street, Fitzpatrick, Frisbee, Deutsche Bank, Watts Street, 23rd Street Collapse, Black Sunday. But on Wednesday, August 2nd, 1978, the FDNY responded to a fire in a supermarket at 2892 Ocean Avenue in the Sheepshead Bay section of Brooklyn. This was a landmark fire in the FDNY and prompted a sea change in the way we approach fires involving trusses. The name of this fire is simply Wall Bombs. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Gore-Tex Professional Fabrics. Now, we all know the working environment of a firefighter is filled with challenges. We face serious risks on the job, such as heat exhaustion, burns, physical and mental stress, and we frequently come into contact with high levels of toxic chemicals. Now, I have been wearing Gore-Tex for nearly two decades on the front line, working in hostile environments, tackling challenging incidents from firefighting to water incidents and in urban search and rescue environments. Gore-Tex have a well-earned reputation for protecting professionals in the fire and emergency services through their family of highly innovative, waterproof, breathable moisture barriers that exceeds global performance standards and are trusted worldwide. Gore-Tex, going further together. Wallbaum's supermarket was located at 2892 Ocean Avenue, Brooklyn. It's a one-story building, 100 by 150 feet. There's also a one-story extension on the exposure floor side. The main store had a mezzanine, which was used for office space. The roof was supported by 100-foot long, heavy timber bowstring trusses. The trusses were spaced around 20 feet apart. The roof also had a rain roof applied to it. The roof had sagged and rainwater did not drain off the roof. This rain roof was installed at the center of the roof and ran the length of the building. This rain roof created a curve of the roof so rainwater could run away. There were two ceilings in the building, a drop ceiling and an older tin ceiling above it. The tin ceiling was not removed when the new ceiling was installed. There were renovations going on within the store while it was still occupied and open to the public. The time of the fire. On August 2nd, 1978, it was going to be a hot summer day. At 8:39, Brooklyn Box 3300 was transmitted by Brooklyn Fire Dispatchers. It was a telephone alarm for a fire at Wallbaum Supermarket on Ocean Avenue. Engines 254, 321, and ladders 153 and 156 and Battalion 33 were dispatched to the fire. While responding, the Brooklyn Fire Dispatcher announced that they were filling out the assignment due to numerous phone calls. Engine 254 Command Lieutenant Edward Smith arrived at the box. He saw some flames near the exposure floor side of the roof where the extension was being constructed. He transmitted a 1075 at 8:45 hours. He ordered his men to drop two handlines, a 1¾-inch handline and a 2½-inch handline, which were pulled from the hose bed. Lieutenant Smith was told that the fire was in the mezzanine area, so Engine 254 started stretching the handline through the front door towards the stairway of the mezzanine. Ladder 153 was the first due company. Lieutenant Simeon was told that the fire was on the second floor, mezzanine. There was no visible fire, but there was a light smoke condition. Ladder 153's inside team was assisting in clearing a path for the hose line and performing the search. The ceilings were being opened. There was little heat, but some fire was observed near where the hose line was operating. The roof and outside vent firefighters went to the roof to perform vertical ventilation. Battalion Chief Arthur Clark from Battalion 33 arrived shortly after Engine 254 and Ladder 153. He transmitted the all hands at 8:49. He saw smoke blowing across Ocean Avenue, and as Battalion Chief Clark approached the building, a man told him that there were oxygen, acetylene and propane bottles in the rear of the store and the gas was shut off. A store employee spoke to Battalion Chief Clark and told him that all shoppers and employees were out of the building. In looking at the first floor, there was no smoke or heat on it. Engine 321 and Ladder 156 arrived at the fire, and Engine 321, led by Lieutenant Tim Howard, assisted Engine 254 in getting the first hand line into operation. Lieutenant Howard observed that there was no fire and a light smoke condition within the store. They returned to the street and stretched a hand line as a backup to the first hand line. As the first line was charged, it suffered two burst lengths. Smoke was getting a little heavier, but nothing to be alarmed about. A third burst length occurs, then it was replaced. and had little effect on the operation. The hose line was advanced up the stairway to the mezzanine. Engine 276 then arrived at the scene, led by Lieutenant James Nielsen. They started stretching a line through the one-story extension on the exposure 4 side, due to seeing smoke in this area. They saw fire in the openings in the wall, leading to the mezzanine in the original building. Chief Clark went to that area to personally observe what Engine 276 was seeing. This confirmed in Battalion Chief Clark's mind that they had a fire in the mezzanine. He told them to operate their hose line into those openings until Engine 254 had their handline operating. The time was 8:54. Engine 254 started operating a hose line into the ceiling. The heat was much more intense in the mezzanine area. There was little smoke. Battalion Chief Clark requested an additional engine and ladder to be sent to the fire. Ladder 156 was the second due ladder company, with Lieutenant James Cutelo, and he and his team began operations. The forcible entry team initially went to the building to check on conditions. The remaining members of Ladder 156 went to the roof to begin vertical ventilation. And after checking on operations inside the store, Lieutenant Cutelo and other firefighters also went to the roof to begin operations. One of the firefighters, Tommy Higgins, was told to remain at the front of the store at ground level. He was ordered to begin venting shot from windows at the front of the building. The wife and children of probationary fireman William O'Connor arrived at the quarters of Ladder 156. They were going to go to a barbecue together at Breezy Point with other family members after the tour ended at 09. The alarm for the fire at Warburns was received at the firehouse as she pulled up. She decided to follow the fire trucks so they could see the loved one in action. When the O'Connor family arrived at the scene, they spotted fireman Billy O'Connor on the ground floor of the supermarket. Louise O'Connor pointed out to her children which of the operating firemen was their dad. He and other members of Ladder 156 were en route to the roof. They were climbing ladders of 156's aerial ladder. Once they arrived on the roof, fireman Billy O'Connor's children were shouting and got their father's attention. He waved to them from the aerial ladder as he was about to go onto the roof. Battalion 42 was the second to arrive, and Battalion Chief Peter Eisman and firefighter Harold Hastings were on it. Chief Eisman arrived and saw smoke in the area but nothing to be alarmed about. He reported into his 1st Duty Battalion Chief, Chief Arthur Clark, and he told him to supervise the roof operations. Chief Clark told Eisman about an air conditioner on the roof that was a concern of his. Both Battalion Chief Eisman and firefighter Harold Hastings climbed ladders 156's aerial ladder to supervise the roof operations. Ladder 169 arrived at the scene. Battalion Chief Clark ordered them to take their saw to the roof to assist with more vertical ventilation. The entire crew working in Ladder 169 raised their aerial ladder and were working on the roof at the rear of the building. They were, however, having difficulty cutting through the roof. However, to them, the roof seemed solid. Deputy Chief James O'Malley of the 12th Division arrived at the fire at 0900. He approached Battalion Chief Clark to get a report, and he asked what actions were being taken. Chief Clark filled him in as the engine, ladder, and rescue assignments already taking place. He was told that he had no exposure problems, and that Battalion 42 is supervising the roof operations. Deputy Chief O'Malley then sent Battalion Chief Clark into the store to supervise operations there. He ordered Rescue 2 to go into the store to help find the fire. Deputy Chief O'Malley then transmitted a second alarm at 9:02. Rescue 2 was sent to the fire on the 1075 signal. Working in Rescue 2 was Lieutenant Howard Vineski, along with his crew of firefighters. When they arrived at Warbonds, it did not appear to be a serious fire. There was no wisp of smoke within the store. The hose lines were operating in the mezzanine area. Firefighter Tom Velabuna went to the roof of the remaining members of Rescue 2. Conditions on the roof were different to those inside the store. Ladders 153 and 156 were cut in with their saws. Scuttle covers were removed and scuttles showed heavy smoke issuing. At first, there was very little smoke coming out of the cut made by the saws. And unbeknownst to the operating members on the roof, there was a double roof. And it took some time for the members operating on the roof to identify the rain roof. The original roof would have had to be cut after the rain roof had been cut. This was not practical due to the depth of the original roof. They moved the cutting operations away from the centre of the roof and those holes showed very heavy smoke. The main concern of the roof was a heavy air conditioning supported by wooden 4x4s. The roof seemed solid. The roof conditions were indicative of a more severe fire condition than was being observed inside the store. Battalion Chief Eisman requested a hose line to the roof to protect the air conditioner. Engine 246 stretched the handline up the ladder 156 to the roof to accomplish the task. Lieutenant Robert Firmbecker of Engine 245 made it to the roof. He saw fire from the top of the aerial ladder, and he had Engine 245's handline charged. He saw some roof material on fire, and reported to Battalion Chief Eisman as they advanced towards it. Conditions on the inside of the store seemed to be improving. Engine 254 was hitting fire in the ceiling of the mezzanine, and the smoke condition was light to moderate. Members of Ladder 153 and Rescue 2 were pulling ceilings to gain access to the fire, and they were utilizing 10-foot hooks to pull them. Then suddenly, at approximately 9:16, inside the store, Battalion Chief Clark and Battalion 33 was up in the mezzanine supervising extinguishing efforts, when suddenly, out the corner of his eye, Battalion Chief Clark saw fire to his left and heard a whooshing sound. He ordered companies to shut down the hose lines and back out. There was quite a bit of fire in the store now. A catastrophic event had just occurred. Truss number 5 had totally collapsed. On the roof, there were 24 members operating. Conditions on the roof were much more severe than they were inside the store. Heavy smoke and fire was showing near vent cowls and holes that were cut. The roof still felt strong, and then suddenly, without warning, a section of the roof just folded in. There was no sound, there was no vibration, and an area of 100 by 40 feet, which was a total of 4,000 square feet, opened up and erupted into intense fire. Everyone that was in that area was swallowed into the fire, and 12 firefighters fell into the inferno. They were Lieutenant James Cotillo, Firefighters Charles Booton, William Billy O'Connor, James McManus, George Rice, Harold Hastings, William Kelly, John Madigan, Harold Plout, Donald King, Terence Campbell, and Thomas Valabuena. In other news, this episode is brought to you in partnership with MSA Safety. Today we have them to thank for the improved firefighter safety through connectivity in their brand new connected firefighter system. At the center of the connected firefighter platform is the MSA M1 SCBA with telemetry. You can view battery life, air pressure, and estimated time remaining either independently on the M1 itself or from the Lunar connected device screen. Also, still with the air status, alarm information, search status, and all of this provided to the incident command for confident decision making during the scene. That integrates straight in with the Lunar system, which is a wireless all-in-one device creating an independent search and rescue network, providing edge detection, enhanced personal thermal imaging, while simplifying post-scene reporting and data retention. One of the key parts of the Lunar is their FAST system, the Firefighting Assisting Search Technology. This combines directional and distance information with thermal imaging to help find separated teammates and decrease response time. It actually connects you to the other crews in the vicinity for a unified search during the time of mutual aid by instantly notifying the network of Lunar devices when there is a downed crew member, allowing for a prompt search and rescue. All of this then plugs into the FireGrid system for cloud-based connectivity, real-time information, and data-driven decisions for the incident commander. It enables you to see the exact location of your firefighters on the scene, and it doesn't require you to be sat on the station. The MSA hub then provides a wireless gateway straight to the cloud, enabling wireless on-scene data for local and remote incident command for additional eyes on the scene. MSA are truly taking massive strides in the future of improved firefighter safety through connectivity. MSA is dedicated to increasing safety in the fire service through technological advancements. Various feature enhancements, new products, partnerships, and integrations will provide additional capabilities readily accessible by products, software, and services in the brand new MSA Connected Firefighter platform. Now back to the show. Deputy Chief O'Malley of 12th Division started to see a heavier volume of smoke out the front of the building. There was no loud sound. There was nothing to indicate to him that the collapse had occurred. And all of a sudden, firefighters came stumbling out of the front of the store. Deputy Chief O'Malley ran to one of the firefighters coming out, and the firefighter told him, "There's men in there." It was 9:16. Deputy Chief O'Malley transmitted a third alarm. 1 minute later, at 9:17, he transmitted a fourth alarm. And at 9:19 hours, Deputy Chief O'Malley of the 12th Division notified the Brooklyn dispatcher that a collapse had occurred with possible victims, and to notify the fire department chaplains. Collapse of Truss number 5 happened approximately 32 minutes after the arrival of Engine 254, the first unit. On the roof, members who had not fallen into the fire were scrambling to get to a wall or a ladder. Captain David Harvey and firefighters Pat Mahaney, Peter Viola, and John Scancy of Ladder 169 scrambled to the parapet on the Exposure 2 and grabbed it as the fire erupted behind them. They made it to the top of the parapet wall, and Battalion Chief Eisman grabbed Engine 254's hose line and operated it as a protection line so that Engine 254 could make it to Ladder 169's aerial ladder. Pat Mahaney of Ladder 169, seeing that Battalion Chief Eisman was close to falling into the blazing hole, started yelling. He ran across the parapet to try and save the battalion chief. He grabbed him. Firefighter Mahaney, Battalion Chief Eisman, and the remaining members of Ladder 169 made it to the rear near avenue. An off-duty battalion chief, Chief Howell, commandeered a ladder from a telephone company truck and raised it so the firefighters could escape off the roof. Inside the store, a sound of a falling wooden timber was accompanied by a sudden eruption of fire in the rear of the store. It wasn't readily apparent what had just happened. The smoke condition worsened. Firefighter Jack Pritchard of Rescue 2 was near the front of the store when the collapse occurred. He ran into Tom Valbuena of Rescue 2 and found that he was severely injured. Firefighter Valbuena fell from the roof into the truss area and onto the tin ceiling. He landed on his feet. He was in complete blackness inside the truss void for a few seconds, and then it lit up. He knew where the front of the store was. He yelled for help. He could hear some of the other firefighters that fell into the truss area. He got low and saw a hole. He dove for the hole and fell to the floor of the store. He said to Firefighter Pritchard, "I think members are still in here." He led Firefighter Pritchard to the area near the rear, and Firefighter Pritchard told him to leave as he started searching himself. He found a firefighter who was dazed and injured. He led him to the front of the store. He went back and found a second and third firefighter. The third firefighter was caught on a shelf. He was pulled out and removed to the front of the store. Firefighters Donald King, Harold Plough, John Madigan, Terence Campbell, William Kelly, and Tom Valbuena fell through the truss area to the floor of the store. Some of them had to punch their way through the ceiling. Some were initially hung in the cables before they fell through onto the floor of the store. They were all severely injured. There were still six firefighters who were hung up in the truss area. They were Lieutenant James Cotillo, Harold Hastings, William O'Connor, Charles Bowton, George Rice, James McManus, and the truss area building was a raging inferno. They all fell into the hole between trusses 4 and 6. Deputy Chief O'Malley made his way towards the scene, and he saw Battalion Chief Eisman after he came off the roof. It was around this time that Battalion Chief Eisman realized his aide, Harold Hastings, was missing. At 9:24, the Brooklyn dispatcher would receive orders from Car 5A to request additional rescue companies respond to the scene. Rescue 1, Rescue 3, Rescue 4, and Squad 1 would respond. At this time, there were 8 or 9 firefighters actively searching and yelling for anyone who could be trapped. The aisles were partially open, and searches could be made despite encroaching fire. The rapid search was made for other survivors. Deputy Chief O'Malley then ordered everyone out of the store because of the dangerous fire conditions and collapse potential. The remaining roof collapsed in the front of the store shortly after all operating firefighters were in the street. An emergency roll call had been ordered. Deputy Assistant Chief Stan Carone sectored off the rescue effort. Deputy Chief O'Malley of 12th Division was in charge of Exposure 1, and Battalion Chief Peter Eisman of Battalion 42 was in charge of Exposure 2. A desperate rescue effort had begun. The rescue efforts in front of the store were partially hazardous due to the front truss and the sloping hip rafters hanging precautiously overhead. Engines 254, 248, 281 and Rescue 2 were making an attempt to get through via the front of the store. This was the point of attack to rescue the unaccounted for firefighters. There was a door there towards the rear. Firefighters from Rescue 2 and Ladder 161 used a battering ram to breach a hole in the wall near where the fifth truss would have been located. Engines 243, 245 and 247 operated their hand lines on the Exposure 2 side, and inside the store was a landscape of collapsed roof decking, trusses, cables and debris. There was a heavy smoke condition and fire pumping through. Walls were also breached in the rear and in Exposure 4 in an attempt to gain better access. Watching the fire in front of the building was Louise O'Connor and her three children. She knew something horrible had happened. Her husband's uncle, Phil Ravallo, was a firefighter working in Engine 254 that tour. The Ravallo family lived nearby. She left the scene and went to the Ravallo home and dropped off her three children. She returned to the fire with young Phil Ravallo, who was a month away from being appointed to the FDNY. He returned to the fire and saw chaos. Young Phil Ravallo saw a firefighter coming out of the store. The firefighter looked completely spent, beaten, and exhausted. It wasn't until the firefighter got much closer to him that he recognized who it was. It was his father. He just said, "Billy's back there. I can't get him." Rescue 1 arrived at the scene around 9:55. Lieutenant James Curran, of Rescue 1 was told there were 10 firefighters unaccounted for. They entered via the breached wall and looked to relieve Rescue 2. The Rescue 2 firefighters would continue to operate. They made their way through the difficult terrain and was generating an acrid smoke. As they made their way through the fire and the rubble, they were searching for any signs of the missing firefighters. As the searching firefighters continued their mission, firefighter Peter Bondi and Bobby Burns dropped down to an area where an aisle was. One of them said, "We found a 6-foot hook." Then a firefighter's helmet was found. Soon after, two of the fallen firefighters were found. Realizing that the other missing members could be nearby, the other firefighters were straining to look through the heavy smoke condition. Firefighter George Crusher of Rescue 1 started pulling roof materials apart near his location, and suddenly, the other four fallen firefighters were discovered. The grim task of recovering the bodies and carrying them out of the building was underway. They were covered and carried out on Stokes basket stretchers. Every attempt was made to shield the bodies of the fallen firefighters from the news cameras. The Brooklyn Fire Dispatcher was notified at 10:52 that there were 6 10:45s fire fatalities. The fire was finally placed in control at 12:45. There were 25 firefighters injured. 6 firefighters received fatal burns as a result of the fire and collapse. 6 other firefighters eventually fell through the truss area to the floor and sustained serious injury. To this day, some hardened veteran firefighters who were at this fire still became emotional when talking about the event. There were 6 wives that lost their husbands and 18 children that were left fatherless as a result of this fire. Firefighters lost at this fire were Lieutenant James Cotillo from Battalion 33, Firefighter Charles Booton of Ladder 156, Probationary Firefighter William O'Connor, also from Ladder 156, Firefighter James McManus of Ladder 153, Firefighter George Rice of Ladder 153, and Firefighter Harold Hastings. In the aftermath of the fire, based on a tip, the police arrested a man, Eric Jackson Knight, who was charged with setting the fire and charged with the deaths of 6 firefighters. In 1980, Jackson Knight was found guilty and sentenced 25 years in prison. However, according to the National Register of Exonerations, in 1988, the judge vacated Jackson Knight's conviction and ordered a new trial after finding that prosecutors improperly withheld information from the defense, including a statement from a police arson investigator that the fire was not arson but electrical. The judge also found that prosecutors withheld a statement by the police detective saying that he believed the fire department had planted evidence of arson, and a memo showing that the fire marshal had given false testimony at trial about some aspects of the investigation. Jackson Knight was released in 1988 and retried in August 1994. The jury acquitted Jackson of all charges. This brings us to the end of the debrief for Walbaum Supermarket on August 2nd, 1978, Brooklyn, New York.
The Firefighters Podcast was created to recognize, acknowledge, inspire, and hopefully even motivate these incredible individuals who have chosen to be part of the first responder community. Our driving purpose is to create a legacy resource for the current and future generations of firefighters and first responders. We get some incredible feedback from listeners and guests. And as the podcast grows, our desire to create longevity and sustainability means we are asking for the support of our listeners. If you want to support the podcast, if you want to get discounts to our merchandise, hoodies, clothing, coins, patches, tallies, and also access to all of the incredible documents get shared with us from our podcast guests and sector leaders, and please head over to our Patreon page, and for just £3 a month, you can support the future of the podcast. Please finally hit that follow, subscribe, or rate button on the platform you're listening, and wherever you're in the world, please support your emergency services responders, and thank you for listening.